Want to make a difference in your community but not sure how? Go to GoFundMe.com right now and start a GoFundMe. Seriously. Your next fundraiser doesn't have to start in a school parking lot or a church basement. You can start a GoFundMe today in just minutes. Fundraise for yourself, a friend, or family member, or an organization. All that matters is that you care about them. GoFundMe is the trusted place to fundraise for what you care about. With no pressure to hit your fundraising goal, but tons of tools to help you reach it, you can confidently start fundraising right now. Whether it's creative, local, or critical, your cause matters. And there's a reason why GoFundMe is backed by millions and chosen by fundraisers everywhere. It works, and it matters. GoFundMe helps you make a real difference. Start your GoFundMe today at GoFundMe.com. That's GoFundMe.com. GoFundMe.com. This is a commercial message brought to you by GoFundMe.
Hello and welcome to the Undercut Podcast. I'm your host this evening, Jesse Billington, and we're back to preview the 22nd round of the 2025 Formula One season, the Las Vegas Grand Prix. And I should preface this by saying, if you're a female listener of this podcast, there will be a second edition released with more matcha and pink glittery text on Sky, whatever it was, Hula, coming out shortly as well. So if you'd rather listen to that one, go check it out on the other channel. But otherwise, I am joined once again by my co-host, Mr. Timo Albers-Daly. How are you?
I'm very well, thank you, Mr. Billington. How about yourself?
I'm not doing too bad. Seemed to be sort of in, I was about to say, in a bit of a lull between just the general chaos that is my life, but then I remembered that I've got yet another apprenticeship assignment on Friday, so I'm sort of still in the maelstrom of general life, really, and looking forward to getting up at 4, 5am for a Grand Prix on Sunday. So, yeah, that's going to be fun.
The best of every world possible, isn't it?
Yeah, it's the best of pop world, let's say, which is a reference to what we were talking about before recording.
Nice.
Before recording, we might as well introduce our friends of the podcast and guests for tonight. We have Inside Formula 2's Fraser Ford and the Haas chap himself, Henry Wallace. How are you both?
Yeah, really good, thank you, Henry. We've got that awkward thing where we're both asked at the same time and one of us has to answer. So, yeah, all good here, thank you. Yeah, Henry, you good?
Yeah, I'm all good. Yeah, just kind of recovering from a bout of general family illness where all three of us have kind of come down with something and trying to organise a whole bunch of house renovations dealing with tradesmen. So it's been hectic, but it's been good.
Oh no, has Hassdog also been ill?
No, Hassdog's never ill. Hassdog's just always like shouting.
Oh, fair enough. I mean, as long as that makes at least one fourth of the Haas household not ill, then I suppose.
That's very true, yeah.
Yeah. But anyway, with the introductions out of the way, we actually have a surprising amount of news to get through in the build-up to the Las Vegas Grand Prix, though mercifully not all of it's actually relating to the Las Vegas Grand Prix. And we'll kick off with the more exciting things, especially as it is the F1 Academy season finale this weekend, and some F1 Academy news. And we'll kick off with Ava Anagnostiadis, I think I can finally say that name, will miss the final round of the season, having recently had surgery on her left foot. Prior to now, she was P16 in the standings with just 5 points to her tally. Rachel Robertson will replace her, stepping into the Tag Heuer-sponsored car operated by Hi-Tech TGR. Peyton Westcott will be this weekend's wildcard driver for the Las Vegas Grand Prix. And meanwhile, every Formula One team has renewed their promise to support an F1 Academy driver moving forward for the following seasons. Cadillac will also be joining the series officially from 2027. There'll also be an exemption from 2027 to the two-year rule for some drivers who wish to enter a third year in the series. It'll be granted exclusively to those whose performance indicates strong potential for continued growth. In more female-related news, Ella Häkkinen, the 14-year-old daughter of Mika, has joined McLaren's junior driver development program. Furthermore, Ella Lloyd will stay in Formula One Academy for next season with McLaren backing, and a third Ella strikes the McLaren junior project as Ella Stevens joins F1 Academy in a second McLaren-backed car. Häkkinen will spend a year testing single seats with McLaren with the goal to then move into them full-time in 2027, and this follows back-to-back seasons of strong performances in karting, including taking major titles. Stevens follows much the same vein of karting success and topped the timing sheets at the rookie test earlier this year. So a lot to unpack when it comes to F1 Academy.
I'll jump in first just with a couple of bonus bits of information, because you know I like to do that, Jesse. And Rachel, she made her racing debut in 2022 and only stepped up into single seat racing this year. So that's going to be quite interesting to see how that develops for next year with F1 Academy, or for this weekend, rather. She was in the Radical Cup UK Championship this year, finished P3 overall. Peyton, meanwhile, she's been in the Formula Winter Series and Pirelli in F4. And interestingly, Ella Stevens, one of the three Ellas, she is mentored by Rob Smedley and also trained by Alice Powell. So she's got some interesting backing behind her. And I don't know if any of you saw the excellently played social media game by the three Ellas when they announced this news of the Spider-Man meme recreation.
Team,
I thought that was a very nice touch.
I'm so glad you brought it up because I was just about to bring it up if you didn't. It was brilliant, and it was the only way, wasn't it, to announce three Ella's re-signing
How
or
often does
signing
this
for.
happen with
Yeah,
any name?
exactly.
I
Unbelievable
feel.
from the McLaren marketing team. But yeah, listen, Emma Häkkinen, I think, let's wait and see what she has to offer. Obviously, still very young, 14 years old, but I think obviously that famous name, that famous surname, good to have the Häkkinen name back in single seaters. And Ella Stevens followed her career for a little while. Really rate her. Think she'll be a great addition to the McLaren setup and to F1 Academy as well. And I think she could, she's definitely one to watch going into next season.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I was going to add on to the memory. I wonder if they could have done something with Rihanna's umbrella, Ella, Ella. I feel like they could have jumped onto something like that as well. You know,
Very
got
good.
like double the amount of traction with
Never have I wanted
the
it to rain more in Las Vegas now, so that they have the
good
opportunity over the
old
weekend.
man. I mean, hopefully with Ella Häkkinen, hopefully it doesn't kind of go down the same route as this sort of Schumacher thing, you know, obviously with like me and my sort of avenue of interest with Haas. Hopefully we don't see a sort of repetition where, you know, the Schumacher name is brought in and it's not performed as well as potentially expected. Hopefully, fingers and toes and everything else crossed that this isn't the case, because, you know, it'd be really cool to see someone like Ella Häkkinen come through a little bit further. But yeah, fingers crossed that the history books aren't repeated in this situation.
Let's hope that her dad gives her some better advice than what he's obviously given Kushmani in Formula 2, because whatever he's been saying to Kush in Formula 2, it's not quite been working out this season. So I hope whatever he says to Ella is yeah some better advice than that. But listen, Cadillac, by the way, joining. I think that's great for F1 Academy, isn't it? Brilliant that all of those teams have agreed to continue to be part of F1 Academy moving into the future. And yeah, absolutely brilliant that Cadillac have joined the other 10 Formula One teams in being part of F1 Academy.
Yeah, I
It'd be
think
interesting as
as
well
well
to
to see the metrics that F1 Academy uses to determine if a driver warrants a third season and who on the grid now might have prompted them to make that change moving forward. And if anyone now who is leaving after this weekend is potentially then on the cards for a return in 27, should they want to, because we always wondered what the motive behind that was, and we understood to an extent, but it also, you could just have two really terrible seasons through no fault of your own. You just have some truly awful luck, and then 1 year's potentially out the window, and you've only got 1 year to prove yourself. It's gonna be interesting to see how that one plays out. And I like the fact that they're not sticking strictly to the rules that they've set for themselves. They've gone, okay, this worked for a while, but we can redraw the lines should we want to. We're not gonna kind of hamstring ourselves with it.
It's nice that they keep evolving the project and sort of giving cause an opportunity. But at the same time, it's an F4 series that's sort of struggling to move people on to the next step, which arguably is Formula 3. And we haven't really seen anyone make that step up yet. Everyone seems to go back to doing regional series. There hasn't been this progression we want to see from any of the drivers that have moved on from Formula One Academy. So I don't entirely know what this idea of a third season is supposed to promote, other than the chance to sort of have another go if you've had a bum 2 years. Because even Leah Block was questioning this the other day. I think it was Motorsport put out this sort of great thing, sort of proclaiming that she could be the next female driver into Formula One. She was like, is this rage bait? Because she knows that her future is ultimately going to be in rallying, rallycross, something along those lines. And Maya Virk has spoken about Formula One Academy in very critical terms as well before, saying it's great for raising your public image, but for actually making progress on a racing schedule, it's kind of useless. It's great for getting your name out there. You're showing you're associated with these major teams, with these major sponsors, and building brand recognition. But for actually getting somewhere, it's quite useless. And the cars aren't fully up to spec. They're a long way off the pace of where they need to be to act as a physical progression into Formula 3 and Formula 2. And still, the greatest hurdle is the money, the backing, the sponsorship of getting these drivers into these other series. Because if you look at a lot of the other recent signings for things like Formula 4, Formula Regional, GB3 series, there have been a wave of female drivers that have been signing into these series that offer arguably a lot more potential than Formula 1 Academy. Formula 1 Academy just trades off of its name and sort of has this sort of great mythical kudos around it because it is, oh, it's the one that races on. It's a Formula 4 series that basically races internationally. It's no different to any other Formula 4 series. And I think it should be judged critically on that because other Formula 4 series are promoting female talent, are promoting interesting talent. And Formula 1 Academy has yet to actually do that. I mean, look at what's happened to its two previous champions. I think we've had two previous champions from this. Where have they ended up? What are they doing now?
I mean, we
Yeah,
know the
exactly.
answers, but I feel like that's not the point you're making there.
No, I was going to bring that up. I was going to bring up Abby Pulling actually off the back of that because she's gone on to another racing series, but it's not like she's advanced through the single seaters to then, get to this point now where theoretically next year she would have been, if the trajectory would have been what F1 Academy would have been intended, she would have been in F2 this year, theoretically. And she's not. She's in a completely different racing series. And what on earth are they going to mark as, what you say, indicating strong potential for continued growth? What sort of metrics are they going to be using? Because I feel like that's not a particularly black and white. Okay, you could argue that with other series and other forms of motorsports about progression and whatnot. But what's the line that you have to be above in order to get a third season in F1 Academy? And actually, what, as you say, Jesse, what does that actually give you in terms of benefit apart from just a more increased profile globally? I
Not
argue
to turn this
maybe not
into a
necessarily that
podcast
much.
that's on purely F1 Academy, but just as a potential last thing, because otherwise we'll be here for hours. And I was going to have a lot of debate, but Fraser, you and I talk about this all the time, with regards to Formula 3 and what is the bar for drivers to have to get over to be able to get into these categories. And you look at Abby Pulling as the perfect example there, and you see some of the drivers that get promoted into Formula 3, and you question what do they have that Abby doesn't. She's at least got a championship under her belt that she still had to go and get. Well, yeah, of course we know what the reason is, but it's always frustrating. You think, yeah, what is actually being done to address those issues, and it doesn't feel like enough is being done in that area. And okay, third season, great, but you need something else to go with that, because otherwise you're just having the exposure, but that's only for like half the battle.
I think, sorry, Jesse, I know we want to move on, but just a real quick one to sum it up. I agree with you, team. I think more needs to be done. That's no, I know the, I'm sure the people at F1 Academy, Susie Wolf, et al, are working extremely hard, and we need to give F1 Academy ch a chance because no series is going to start producing Formula One ready drivers in the space of 2 years. Hopefully the series keeps moving in the right direction. Something I'm really interested to see is Luna Fluxer has been is stepping into Spanish F4 for 2026 with Campos Racing. Spanish driver, for anyone that isn't aware of her, Mercedes-backed driver, has been in the Mercedes Academy since 2022 and is the real deal. So it's going to be really interesting to see what Luna does, how Luna does in Spanish F4, to see how she does. Or what she does next. Because if she has a really good season in Spanish F4, she's got a couple of options then. Does she go to F1 Academy and do it alongside another series? Or does she actually, essentially not do F1 Academy and do the what would be the traditional male route of going from Spanish F4 into Fracker, for example, and almost bypass F1 Academy? And what does that do for F1 Academy if they're probably the next best female racer then decides to skip the series? I think that's gonna be really interesting to watch. Not to put too much pressure on Luna because she's literally just not even stepped foot in a Spanish F4 car yet. But I think that's a really interesting story to watch unfold. And yeah, Mercedes, I'm sure, will have a really clear plan and pathway for her, and to see her potentially step up into F3 at some point in the future, which we'd all love to see.
It's just an interesting prospect because it's a series that fundamentally has a lot to offer, but ultimately we're yet to see the sort of meaningful benefit of it when we look at what we always refer to as the conventional, as you said, it's the sort of the male pathway into Formula One. Look at Marta Garcia. She's found great success when it comes to GT and sports car racing. Look at the series she had in what she's running in the sort of Le Mans Cup series in Europe this year, where sort of as a team with the Iron Dame, she was able to place fourth. She had wins, she had podiums. It was great. And you look at what Abbie Pulling's doing and still trying to get into single seaters, but she has said time and time again that the hurdle is money. It's not the capability, it's not the practicality of it. It's the fact that no one wants to sponsor a female driver, and that ultimately Formula One Academy cannot fix in and of itself. It's a sticking plaster. It's a bridging pool to wait in while you build up, as Marta, as Meyer Burg said, as a bridging pool to simply sit in and accrue money to try and fund a Formula 3 seat. Because there's no point in Meyer Burg winning Formula 1 Academy in the days when you were given a Freca seat. She had one of those. She was doing quite well in Freca. And then she's
It
in.
was one of the things we kind of criticized about it the first time. It was more of a sideways step than a step up. And I think
Now she'd go to
just
GT.
knowing what the end goal is for that series is going to be the fundamental thing, because it definitely has a purpose. And if it's introducing drivers to single-seater racing, giving female drivers an opportunity they might not get in a regional series from wherever they're from or what have you, and helping to develop the talent, then fine. But then bridge that with other regional series to say you're meant to be on par with, you're not going to be having a step up. There's a way to work around it, but maybe like the third season change to the rules that they've made, they need to reassess what the actual end goal is and how they fit into the overall arc of it. Because if we're coming into this every year going, these drivers should be going to F3, we're going to keep being disappointed and they're having to do it by themselves. I think the European Le Mans Series, Le Mans Cup, and GB3 is sort of the highest level we've seen anyone go into. And that's either a completely different racing series entirely, or it's just more of, like we were saying before, a sideways step. And that's then where the real issue comes. But we should probably move on before we get into a whole F1 Academy episode and then have to redo everything else for Las Vegas.
We should move on, and we'll instead make it into a Formula E episode very quickly, where
Much better.
Porsche have announced they'll be running four cars in Formula E, adding essentially a junior second team to their lineup for the 2026-2027 season. And a lot of people have criticized this. This is in the wake of essentially them pulling out of WEC and other sports racing series. And this is as the sport will move into its Gen 4 era in the next season. Obviously, their current season is just kicking off. And this means that Porsche will be running this sibling team to its works car. This is better phrased, however, as a reallocation of efforts, because this season they are technically already running six 99X electric cars, with two sets being used by customer teams, Andretti and Cupra. Moving forward, Andretti will swap to using Nissan cars and powertrains, with Cupra staying on, essentially freeing up two of these chassis for Porsche. So a lot of people are getting very annoyed, going, this is why we're not seeing them doing work, this is why we're not seeing them doing IMSA and everything, and so on and so forth. And I'm going, no, it's just Porsche tightening their belts and focusing on where they're doing quite all right. And they've already got six cars here. It's just the stickers that they're applying to it, really, at this point in time.
I'm just hoping that they'll be the first team to put a female driver full time in one of their four seats. That's all you need to do to make me happy about it. There we go. Job on, Porsche.
We'll wait and see what happens there. For the sake of moving things on, unless anyone's got a desperate point to make about Formula E, we'll move on from the overgrown scale electrics to the Daytona 500, where Max Verstappen is looking to compete. Roush Fenway Keselowski Racing, RFK for short, have submitted an open exemption provisional allowing Max Verstappen to compete for the team in the 2026 500. And this would be very interesting to see him in a NASCAR. For one, I think he is one of the most adaptable drivers we currently have on the grid. You can put him in anything, and it takes him about four laps to figure out that he's biblically fast. But also, we had Kyle Larson proclaim claiming that he is as good as Max Verstappen, and we might get to see them finally go head to head in some closely matched machinery. This would be fun.
I would enjoy that a lot.
Immensely fun.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not Max's biggest fan, but if he does go over there, then I'd love to see him, yeah, beat Larson head to head and shut him up, basically. So, yeah, I just think it would be entertaining, wouldn't it?
Although, imagine the kind of bragging rights Larson would have if he beats Verstappen. You know,
Yeah.
I mean, again, it's I suppose it's expected that Larson would beat him, considering it's more his home turf, but at the same time, you'd be you maybe weren't expecting that to happen when you first made the call if you're Larson. But I'm just glad we're seeing more cross-pollination. Admittedly, it's just Verstappen at the moment seeming to do the front work of it, but it seems to be like the old days of motorsport where you could just flitter between racing series and different categories and at your heart's content and no one's stopping you, and that's how it should be.
So genuine question then.
Uh-oh.
Alonso tried to do the Triple Crown and hasn't done it so far. Whether he does it in the future, yet to be seen. Could Verstappen do the Triple Crown?
Only trouble with that
Absolutely.
is he has no interest in IndyCar per his own kind of proclamation. So I could see him, he's capable, but someone needs to have a word to them about IndyCar and go, Triple Crown, go on, go on.
No,
Just
this is
do
one
one.
of these things because Max really likes his endurance racing, doesn't he? And I think he's got interest in doing the 24 Hours of Le Mans. And whether somebody would be able to convince him to partake in the Indy 500, I don't know if it would be a massive stretch because it's one race. And I think he probably would have enough kudos and enough backing to be able to grab a seat in the Indy 500. So I think he's definitely capable. And I think it would be cool to get somebody of this generation, certainly of the longest time, to actually get the Triple Crown, because it's then one of those accolades that, so very few have got, that would be of this current generation of sports car drivers, to
Just
get.
racing drivers
And I'm
generally.
all for it. Yeah.
Yeah, in the argument for greatest of all time, I think nailing the Triple Crown would be a fairly good way of doing it, especially if you can get the Daytona 600 on top of that. And the added advantage here is, of course, Red Bull moving over to have Ford on board as a technical partner. RFK exclusively provides engines for Ford teams in NASCAR and ARCA. So obviously, Max utilizing some clever links here and there. And I believe I'm correct in saying that I think Ford are returning to running prototype cars at Le Mans. So there is a very real chance that we could see at some point, at least while he's still contracted to Red Bull Ford, Max Verstappen making moves to completing certainly elements of the Triple Crown, whether he eventually then sort of properly jumps back to Honda, uses his connections there to maybe have a go at the 500. We'll wait and see. But it is interesting times if you're Max Verstappen. And if I was Kyle Larson, I would be hitting the sim and just making sure I know my left-hand turns pretty good. Meanwhile, speaking of endurance racing and of course Le Mans, Jamie Chadwick is heading off to Genesis for LMDH as a series. Following her run as a test driver for the team, she now joins as a reserve option as well. She'll be doing development work with the GMR001 and will be completing several sessions on track in and in the simulator. And this will be combined with a yet to be announced racing program. So we could see Genesis popping her in an LMP2 class just to keep her fresh, ready to do sort of endurance bits. It is a great proving ground for drivers looking to move up to the hypercar class. Look at a couple of the guys who won LMP2 at Le Mans and then moved up. And I'm thinking explicitly of our number one Polish driver in Formula One, who I cannot remember his name.
Robert Kubica.
Kubica, who won in LMP2 and then moved up and won with AF Corsa this year as well. So it's a well-proven ground, and I wouldn't be surprised if that's what we see Jamie Chadwick striving towards, especially with the backing of Genesis coming in as a very exciting project.
I can't believe you forgot Kubica's name. I mean, shame on you.
I've got too many names going around the head at the moment, honestly.
Disgusting, by the way. I thought when you said number one Polish driver in single seaters, I thought you were talking about Roman Belinsky. So outrageous.
Yeah, I can't remember them all. I can't remember them all. But anyway,
Can't remember any of them.
back to Chadwick though. What do we think? Is this
Oh
going
yeah, it's
to
great. It's great to see her making the step up. It's natural progression for her. She seems to have really found home in endurance racing. I mean, she wasn't bad in single seaters either by any stretch of imagination. But endurance racing again, the cross-pollination, being able to switch into a different category and excel. It was great watching her throughout this season. So for her to then be rewarded with the next step up, yeah, more of that. Keep it coming.
going to be really exciting stuff. We'll move closer to Formula One now, and we'll touch on the very interesting talking point of John Elkann, who has been there's no other way of describing this, chatting shit. Ferrari chairman John Elkann says the company's Formula One drivers Lewis Hamilton and Charles Leclerc need to focus on driving and talk less. Elkann said at an Olympic sponsorship event in Rome on Monday following the team's double DNF at the Sao Paulo Grand Prix that the team's mechanics and engineers were performing well, but if we look at the rest, it is not up to scratch. He added, and we definitely have drivers who need to focus on driving and talk less because we still have important races ahead of us and getting second place is not impossible. And it's a tricky talking point to balance, as in the same weekend that the F1 team was struggling for pace at points, Ferrari wrapped up a dominant season in the World Endurance Championship. Three Ferrari teams topped the boards, but across the seat by season's end, accruing 10 podium finishes between them across the season. Following Ferrari's limited points haul in Brazil, they've dropped to fourth in the standings, with both Red Bull and Mercedes jumping the Scuderia. On the one hand, Elkann has a point. On the other, he needs to shut up, because ultimately you don't sign a world champion and then not listen to him. Oh, wait, hang on. Ferrari.
Not just a world champion, a seven-time world champion who is also very much in contention for one of the greatest of all time. And after a weekend where at least one of your drivers essentially got punted out of the race through no fault of his own. So maybe just learn a thing or two about racing first before making comment. But I don't think he's worth wasting much more breath on, in my own opinion. You three can if you want to, but I'm not going to bother. Not worth my hassle.
No, I mean, it's one of those things where I feel like the culture surrounding Ferrari, and Ferrari knows best, needs to kind of.
It's been working well for them, hasn't it?
It's really been working well for them, because you look at the Mercedes outfit, and you could argue whether or not that was entirely Lewis Hamilton's influence, or that was a combination of Toto Wolff's determinism and, you know, stepping up investment, because that Mercedes, you know, they weren't great before you know, Lewis stepped in. And even Clarkson famously said, like, why on earth have you gone to Mercedes and why have you left McLaren? At some point you have to realize that there is a limit to an ego, and that you actually need to back that up with cold, hard evidence that the team is moving in a positive direction and isn't kind of stuck in the 1960s. Yes, look at us, we're Ferrari, we're so brilliant, look at our sunglasses. Prove it, then. You know, the win for Kimi Raikkonen in 2007 was only because Alonso and Hamilton were quibbling between each other. It's just not the way that this team, with such the accolade that it has and such the history that it has within motorsport, should be talking about itself. It should be, we need to buckle down. We need to really understand why things are going the way that they are. We need to look at our competitors for inspiration, not remain in the same stagnant environment that Ferrari and Maranello seems to have got itself stuck in.
I mean, I was desperately thinking, from John Elkann's perspective, why he's decided now to make those comments. And, you know, I was thinking, is he trying to motivate the team? Is that his way of motivating them? Is he tried everything else, every other way of motivating them, and it's not working, so he's trying something different? Maybe I'm giving him the benefit of the doubt there. But I just, you know, when were the comments made? Last Monday. We're now at Wednesday, 9 days later. Still trying to work it out, to be honest with you. It's no obvious answer.
Is it because if that's how you is that because that's not how you'd motivate someone if you were in that position? Would you use different words?
Listen, I'm not John Elkann, and I'm not the chairman of Ferrari, and he's obviously an incredibly intelligent and an incredibly successful guy. So I don't think I'm in a position to tell him what to do. I was just trying to understand from his perspective what he was trying. Like, as I said, like, he's obviously an incredibly smart guy. So to make a comment as reckless as that just seems a little bit crazy to me. So I was just trying to understand
Maybe that's the answer there, Fraser. None of us are smart enough to understand.
Maybe exactly that. But listen, as you say, Ferrari haven't won anything since 2007. You've got a seven-time world champion, one of the greatest of all time, if not the greatest of all time, definitely the greatest of all time statistically in terms of race wins there. Surely you listen to that, to Lewis Hamilton, and try to, which I'm sure Ferrari are doing, I'm sure they're doing that, but it just, that the comments didn't quite make sense, did they? And I'm really interested to see what Lewis Hamilton and Charles Leclerc are going to say in the press conferences this week. I'm sure they'll be contractually obliged to say to gloss over it and to not make a big fuss about it at all. But listen, I'd love to be a fly on the wall as to what Lewis Hamilton made of
It
those comments.
does strike me as a plot from The Thick of It, where you see the local MP go, "I've got a brilliant soundbite that I'm going to put to the press," and then you see how it all actually plays out, and then Peter Capaldi's coming along, "Oh no, that's this hasn't gone well, has it?"
Exactly. It's yeah. Let's wait and see. If Ferrari finish 1-2 on Sunday in Vegas, then we'll all be in our words and talking about John Elkann, an absolute genius, won't we? So.
I mean, if Elkann gets his way, Ferrari, the drivers won't be saying anything in the press conferences because they'll have been told to stop talking. And equally, if he was an incredibly smart man, he would have figured out that it is possible to get away with tax evasion, especially in Italy, which he somehow failed to do. And it's not at all libelous to mention that because it's an open case and he was convicted of that. So you can happily say that he is a tax fraud and clearly not smart enough to get away with tax fraud in Italy, of all places. Anyway.
You didn't want Ferrari sponsoring the podcast, did you? Because
No.
I think you've ruined that opportunity, Jesse.
That paddock pass has just gone straight
Yeah.
out the window.
He doesn't listen to this. McLaren does, probably.
He might.
I highly doubt it. I've checked. We don't have any listeners in Modena, so we're probably fine. Anyway, moving on to a different team principal, and Toto Wolff is in advanced talks to sell part of his shareholding in the Mercedes Formula One team. The deal values Mercedes at £4.6 billion, which makes it a record for a Formula One team after McLaren were fairly recently valued at £3.5 billion in their change of ownership structure in September. Wolff, who owns one third of Mercedes Formula One, would sell a shareholding in the region of 5%. The 50-year-old, though, would stay on as team principal and chief executive officer if the sale goes through. The deal would represent a significant increase in value of Mercedes since Ineos brought its stake for 208 million in 2022. So these are big numbers here.
These are big numbers. I wonder if he's planning on like building an extension to his house. He just like needs the extra cash.
Yeah, essentially taking out sort of like freeing up value from your home, one of those sort of schemes for the elderly where they sort of say free it up for your retirement and ultimately your kids are left paying your mortgage, but something
Yeah.
along those lines, but with Mercedes.
How old is his and Susie's son? Is he getting to the point where he's go-karting now? Is it potentially funding a career all the way to Formula One? Is he going to be an F1 dad at some point? I don't know. I don't know, Jesse.
He's
Is
in
he?
go-karts. We've seen him go-karting in Drive to Survive because he's had George Russell as a driver coach.
And Kimi Antonelli as well. He's had both of them. So I don't know whether his son's at the age where he's potentially moving up the ladder potentially. Either that or it's the start of Toto Wolff potentially stepping back and he might do a couple more years as CEO, for example, and then give that up and just be a shareholder and be focused on other projects. I don't know. I don't know. But I definitely I was intrigued when I saw the news and probably looked into it far too much. So,
Assuming I've got my zeros in the right order, 5% of Mercedes is £230 million. So that is a staggering amount of money. But then again,
Fraser, if I chip in 50 quid and you chip in the rest, we could own 5% of Mercedes.
I mean, yeah, let's go with that. Definitely. So,
I've got £2.63 in my back pocket. Will that work?
We
We'll
all
hire you on as socials person.
if we all chip much, well, there's that like celebrity buying conglomerate that like bought out a stake of Alpine the other season that had like Ryan Reynolds and Rory McIlroy in it. So we could do exactly the same thing where we all put a little bit of money in a pot and buy a small amount of Mercedes and get to attend races and look like we know what they're on about. We could do that and inadvertently fund Jack Wolf's
We
co-karting
could be
two career.
Tobias Menzies' character from the F1 film, just wandering around pretending we know what the hell's going on.
Yeah, but ultimately it doesn't end particularly well for him. He does sort of get shown up by
Do
the
you
end.
think we could buy like 10 bolts for like the floor and just have our names written on it instead of like paying for like a big sponsorship thing on the side of the car? We'll just have like a really T. There's Jesse. There's Timo. Or it just have to be Timo because your name's too long.
I reckon we might get a letter. I reckon, Henry, a letter maybe. That's as far as it goes.
How much is a lug nut for a Formula One car these days? Like the wheel nut that holds
I'm just thinking you're giving all these F1 teams far too many more ideas for marketing opportunities for
Oh, don't tell this to
sponsors.
Zac Brown. Zac Brown would be all over that, wouldn't
Zac Brown would be selling you the opportunity to have your name engraved onto like the face of the wheel nut. Because obviously, if you and three friends wanted to do that, you could be on an F1 wheel nut. And just, certainly at Qatar coming up, you've got two pit stops a race. That's three sets of tyres. That's 12 people you could con out of £25,000 to have their name
he?
written.
As somebody whose face has been on the side of a Formula One car, you can't really see them too much. But the knowledge and the acclamation that you have from saying, "Oh yeah, my face has been on the side of an F1 car," is still pretty cool.
Yeah, I would
Would I
pay
pay for it?
£15 for
You
the
pay
privilege.
for it?
Yeah.
I don't think it would be £15, Jesse. So yeah, maybe £1,500,
I'm not asking to keep the wheel nut, I'm just asking for the privilege.
maybe.
Anyway, with that out of the way, we'll talk about trains for a brief moment. This is the fact that Formula One technology is being implanted into trains on a Wi-Fi pilot scheme on Great Western Railway. It's a bit of an interesting one, but essentially it uses Formula One's data communication software that's being transplanted into fast-moving adaptive Wi-Fi units that will be using low Earth orbit satellites to create a more reliable connection. I wish that Thameslink would start to apply this because they promised us Wi-Fi back in 2014, and we still haven't got it. But that's Thameslink. Anyway, it's just an interesting thing, especially considering where Great Western Railway runs to. You've got some of the more sort of rural locations on the sort of UK train line routes, and it's great to see again one of those sort of like applied technologies from Formula One, from Williams inventing a way to keep open-fronted refrigerator units at supermarkets cold to Wi-Fi on trains. It's great. I love it.
And Nick Ferrari
It's
is
cool.
involved with all of this as well. So obviously big F1 background there, and is meant to essentially reliably connect everything without dropouts. So between that and the fact that we know Henry loves a good old train, I thought, why not include the story here? Got to keep everyone
Oh, you made me happy regardless. You didn't have to include.
happy.
You could write trains are crap, and I'd still love you. It's pretty cool. I think the only criticism that I think I would say is that, like, yes, the Wi-Fi thing is a very important thing for the passengers, but potentially that sort of communication thing could be branched to the actual running of the railway. Because for somebody who works for a rail company, the communication between the people on the ground and the people in the control centres is problematic even at the best of times. So hopefully we would see something kind of brought in, especially with the nationalization of the rail network over the next few years. Hopefully
Whoa,
that
whoa, whoa.
will
You
be
mean to tell
something
me that the
that
token system and putting notes in a
could be
lunchbox and throwing it into
applied.
the cab as a train goes past is past its sell-by date?
I know Thameslink has this reputation. It has changed, Jesse.
Has modernized slightly. Anyway, before Henry and I get sidetracked on a rail engineering podcast, we should probably end up on Rail Matter at some point. We'll talk about Sandipol Inthropoulos, and he is heading to Formula 2 with ART for 2026. A bit of a mixed season in Formula 3, but his racecraft has come on well, and he's bagged a feature race win as well as a few podiums. So it's going to be nice to see how he progresses, whether he's one of those talents that properly flourishes when he gets to Formula 2, or one of the ones that sort of struggles a bit when they get to Formula 2. It's very much a sort of sink or swim scenario, as we've seen for quite a few drivers recently. But some of those ones that sunk ended up making it to Formula 1. So we might hear Crofty say Sandipol Inthropoulos at some point soon.
Don't think we'll hear him say it correctly the first few Grand Prix, at least. If he can't sort out Hadjar after an entire season practically, then I don't think we're going to be holding our breath for a short amount of time. But yeah, Fraser, P7 overall this season for him in F3 with three victories. He's in that sort of middle ground on in terms of what we expect from him in F2, because ever since Kush Maini came along and did that first season in F2 after being dreadful in F3, we don't know what to do with anyone now. And I feel like now this is someone who's in that middle ground of maybe.
Now you're spot on. Just to go back to Inthropoulos and Crofty, it's a he actually goes by the name of Taz. He shortens his name to Taz in the paddock, right? So everyone in the paddock will call him Taz. Chris McCarthy, obviously
I
Sky
thought you meant
Sports
Hadjar for a
commentator.
second there. I was so lost with what you were on
No,
about.
no, no. Yep. So Yeah, he goes by the name of Taz, but Chris McCarthy practiced so many times in pre-season that to get his name absolutely spot on that he full names him in races, and now I think fans call him obviously by his full name, but in the paddock he's just known as Taz. So maybe Crofty will just go with Taz when he eventually makes it to Formula One if he
He'll
does.
say it two or three times and then switch. I got, you know what, Paz. Paz is
Yeah.
what I'm going to call him.
Exactly that, exactly that. But no, Intrapid Sack is a really interesting one. I think he, for me, is probably the driver who improved the most from F3 last year to F3 this year. I was actually pleasantly surprised with how well he did in Formula 3 this year. And you say seventh in the championship, won, a race winner in Formula 3. You can't look past that. You don't win races in Formula 3 by accident. So I think that's a real positive for him. So yeah, let's wait and see how he does it. I think in Formula 2, it's really, really interesting how I think we've seen for the first time the real shift in the driver market with Prema and ART not attracting the big names for the first time. Obviously, Gabrielli Mini, they had a bad season in 2024, which was the new regulations. Both Prema and ART, both of those teams were still able to attract big names for, or have big names for 2025 in Victor Martin stayed at ART for 2025, and Gabrielli Mini went to Prema for 2025 as well. So I think this year is the, we're expecting Mary Boyer to go to Prema to partner Sebastian Montoya at Prema, obviously, and then Intrapuvisac potentially alongside Laurens van Hoopens in ART, which, all due respect to those drivers, maybe not the biggest names in Formula 2. They haven't been able to attract the names like Colton Herta, for example, Hi-Tech, Campos, and Invicta seem to be the place that, drivers who think they have a shot at the championship want to be rather than Prema and ART. So yeah, it'd be interesting to see how Intrapuvisac does. Maybe ART surprise everyone and they back to the front in 2026 and back to winning ways, and that would be great. But yeah, let's see how Intrapuvisac does. I think he's and maybe he'll win a sprint race this year. Maybe he'll win a couple of races, get a few podiums, and I think that'll be a solid first season for him.
Yeah, the shift in the way that the teams have been performing in Formula 2 and Formula 3, certainly in Formula 2 with the arrival of the new types of car and the new chassis and the aerodynamics, has been really interesting, especially when you look at sort of the level that ART was performing at. You look at their spell with Jack Aitken, George Russell, you look at the performance Nyck de Vries had there, and then it was still really strong as late as sort of 2022, 23 with the likes of Fred Vesti, Théo Pourchaire coming through. And then it just tumbled away last season. You're sort of thinking, what went wrong? And it's not like they had a bad driver lineup either. Zach O'Sullivan is fairly competent as a driver, and so is Victor Martins. But it was just this shift to the new type of car, getting the data understood, the setups, is one of those things that shows that while Formula 2 is ultimately a spec series, there is a bit of this sort of hierarchy in the way the teams run. And somehow we sort of saw these almost once underdog teams bubble up to the top of the rankings. And we've had a really interesting sort of run of it for the past 2 years.
Be fair with Victor Martins, though, he did have some kind of curse on him all of last season, because I don't know what other explanation there could have been for the year that he had. He just never seemed to have any good luck whatsoever.
Did he, or is he just not good enough?
Ooh, Fraser. Traitorous.
A cutting blow. One could say that maybe while he was good enough, the problems he had may have stemmed more with the fact that he seemed to have sort of been somehow magnetically attracted to Alex Dunn at certain points on the racetrack. But again, that's a point for discussion at a different point in time. Meanwhile, we've already mentioned it once already this evening. Qatar is going to be a tyre mandated race again, but more on that when we get to it, because I think it says a lot about how badly Pirelli have managed their tyre construction for this season. But we'll move more importantly to the Las Vegas Grand Prix, where currently in Las Vegas, it's absolutely tipping it down. And the streets are flooded, and it's a very interesting scenario indeed.
There's potential for Henry's F1 Academy meme
There
to
is
come true.
potential for many things to happen this weekend. Interestingly enough, Racing Bulls have now achieved more double Q3 appearances this season than Red Bull have. And we've got some special liveries this weekend. Williams, theirs is all right, I guess. Salvas is cool. Checkered flag draping around the car, it looks nice. Toro Rosso's looks cool as hell, and Alpine have ditched the yellow bit and added more pink, which is again sort of jumping on the Sky Sports Halo trend, if a bit late.
My
Have you
easy-ish history question for the three of you then on the back of that, as there is somewhat limited history with Las Vegas. So I'm taking Las Vegas as a whole in F1's history.
Oh,
Which
wow.
three drivers were crowned champions in Las Vegas?
Who was it? Was
One is very
Nelson
obvious.
Piquet.
Bonus point for the year.
Nelson Piquet must have been 1984, or was it 81 or 83? 81 was Vegas, yeah.
That's correct.
Max Verstappen, obviously.
Good man, last year.
And sorry, Jesse, go on.
Alan Jones?
Ollie Bearman, 2026.
Mm. Incorrect, and maybe.
Who was the other?
Oh, it was Rosberg.
It
Okay, no,
was.
Rosberg,
What
yeah.
year?
82.
82. Yeah, you're
82.
right,
There we go.
Jesse.
Yeah, the season where he only won one race or something, just did it entirely off consistency.
Yeah. Jesse, you missed Timo, great quiz, by the way. Love that. You
Always do my
Jesse,
best.
you missed the, and it has only happened in the last couple of hours, so totally not your fault when I let you off. But Lewis Hamilton's new helmet design for this weekend is outrageous. Go and check that out if you haven't seen it, right?
Unbelievable.
It is unbelievable, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah. What a guy.
Kind of rem a little bit reminiscent of, wasn't it Lando Norris who went for the disco ball?
See, yeah, similar vibes actually, isn't it?
Ooh,
Yeah.
that's jazzy.
Oof.
Yeah. It's very out there. It's yeah.
You
I
should
think
be able to
the
spot
Paper
him quite easily
Archie.
from the far out shots.
Yeah.
Yeah. You'll spot him from a mile off, won't you? But yeah, I bet Jacques Villeneuve will be absolutely fuming, won't he? It'll be yeah, disgusting that.
I know Lando's got a Vegas helmet as well. His is unveiled. It's called like Art in Motion, and it's sort of based on the 3D paintwork with Werner Bronckhorst, which I quite like actually. It looks really cool, and it's got like the tiny little details that are sort of part of Werner Bronckhorst's work. If you've ever seen it, it's one where he sort of really thickly lays on acrylic paint and uses the texture of the paint on the canvas to tell more of a 3D scene, and then sort of adds intricate detail to it. I have to say, Lando's one looks pretty good. Yeah, Lewis's bedazzled helmet, that's good. I think Oscar's got one that throws back to his old RC racing days as well, his old remote control days. So there's some interesting bits. I think Esteban Ocon's biggest nerd helmet of the season.
Yes, I was just about to say, of course it is Venom and Spider-Man both combined. Yeah, that is major Marvel nerd right
Yeah, it is his favorite superhero,
That's
so I
it.
can understand why he's gone for it. But yeah, there's some good liveries out there and some great special helmets. I think all the drivers love getting into the spirit of Vegas and really pushing the boat out. It's quite fun. So,
Other than Max Verstappen.
other than Max Verstappen, who really got into it though last year when he did win his championship, and I still love watching back. Like, you can tell at what point in the evening he did certain press conferences based on how drunk he was when he did them, because there was one where he did it with like one of the Dutch broadcasters, and he just makes himself like this absolutely stacked. I think it was like a gin and tonic or something in Red Bull, and you can tell that it's more spirit than it is mixer at that point. You're like, yeah, I respect that, especially for Dutch TV also going, yeah, we'll let him go, it's fine. It was perfect scenes, especially because there was that moment in 23, was it, where, or 24, where he's in the taxi with was it Charles and Checo, and it was 23 where they're heading off to the podium in the limousine with Charles and Checo, and he's going, can we just go straight to the club? I'm like, Max Verstappen ultimately does enjoy the Las Vegas Grand Prix. He just doesn't want you to know it. He's like me in a pop world. He hates doing it sober. Once you get him drunk, he loves it.
If Jesse ever goes missing, we know where to look first.
Yeah, I'll be drunk in a pop world, which ultimately isn't actually that strange a sentence. Unless you've got anything else to add for the Las Vegas Grand Prix, we might as well move into some predictions. Which sounds like we're ready to move into some predictions then, based on that complete silence, which I'll try and edit round. So we'll kick off with positions for pole predictions for pole position, please. There's too many P's for me to try and get through this late in the
It's
evening.
easy for you to say.
Yeah, it really isn't. Timo, we'll start with yours.
I've got to give him something on my predictions, so I'll give Lando Norris pole position, and that's as far as he's going to get with the weekend for me. Going to switch things up in the championship a bit.
Yeah, I'm gonna join you on that one, mostly because every time I keep predicting things for Oscar Piastri, nothing happens for him good at all in a race. So I'm gonna try and like avoid predicting things for him to see if I can turn that round. It's very much the inverse of his Ultimate Burger sponsorship tie-in thing, where as soon as they started say sort of offering promotional Oscar Piastri burgers whenever he won, they then had to step it down to whenever he got a podium, and then they're like, clearly we're just a bad luck curse. So they stopped the tie-in with Piastri, because I'm like, this is clearly not going well for the poor
It was
guy.
quite a fun time to see an Oscar Piastri burger and a Wicked burger offered by the same burger chain. Didn't have that on the bingo card for 2025.
The amount of food coloring going into this, pink, green, and orange, is just unsettling. Anyway, with Norris predicted for both Timo and I, Henry and Fraser, which way are you going for your pole position prediction?
I have had a history on this podcast of not necessarily leaning into my brand. So I think it's going to be a real big turnaround for this driver. It's been up and down, and he's had his highs and his lows.
Oh no.
But Esteban Ocon is going to get the
Oh
podium.
It's a bold
no.
call.
Esteban Ocon pole
Hey, I've got to
position.
shoot my shot. I've got to shoot my shot, haven't I?
Don't worry, guys. It gets worse from here. I've read his other prediction. Oof.
So I don't think mine is quite as bold as that, but I'm actually going to go for George Russell. I think he had maybe his most disappointing weekend of the season in Brazil. I think that's fair to say. Obviously, first race of the season where he was genuinely outperformed by Kimi Antonelli in almost every session. So yeah, Mercedes have already said they feel confident coming into Vegas. It could be their one race, their last shot at winning a race. And George has history around here, so I'm going to go for George Russell, pole position.
That's a pretty solid one. I'll give you that one. We'll move then on to the podium. Timo, I'll let you start with yours.
Kind of following Fraser's logic with George Russell and history in Vegas, I've put him in second place overall, and I'm going to sandwich him between Piastri in first and Verstappen in third. I want this championship to go down to the wire, and therefore I need Oscar to win, and I need Max to still be clipping away at a pair of the McLaren's heels. So no Norris at all. Keep those two on the podium. Let's have some fun, and then George Russell, because he just, why not? Like you say, we need him back up after Brazil. We don't want him sad for too long.
So Norris is going to start on pole and he's not going to finish on the podium. What's going to happen to him,
Correct.
teammate?
He's going to
Who
lose.
knows?
Like,
2024.
who knows?
Yeah, Norris loses the
Was that
lead
where I
pole
got my inspiration from? Yes.
spot.
We'll see how it gets. A solid prediction. I'm going to go again, sort of leaning into my fear of trying to not curse Oscar Piastri to bring him back into championship contention. Norris, Russell, Albon as my top three. And again, I think we're going to see some interesting conditions. It's an interesting circuit, Vegas, and I think the Williams may be able to extend an advantage. Plus, Albon could do with a solid result. So, optimistically, that solid result is going to be a complete podium. So, we'll see how that pans out.
Well, you think yours is optimistic. I'm going for Ollie Bearman because he's been an absolute. Don't go to Ferrari in 2027, Ollie. Please, just stay with us because we need you. Ocon doesn't convert the pole into a win, but he's had a win, so I don't think he'll mind. And Kevin Magnussen, somehow he'll get another seat in the third Haas on the grid, and he'll pick up P3 because he needs to bookend his F1 career, which I'm still not believing is over with another podium.
It's
Right,
funny,
P3
Henry.
wasn't bold enough as it was, but in a third Haas car, you can't even
Yeah.
give him a seat at another team.
Well, that's what I was thinking, Henry. I was thinking, were you going to go with Chloe Chambers? I was thinking, you said Bearman, you said Ocon, I'm getting the Haas one too. So does Chloe Chambers just jump in her F1 Academy car and come out onto the circuit and P3?
It's a shame because Chloe Chambers doesn't race for Haas anymore in F1 Academy. It's Courtney Crome.
Oh, of course it is. What are we talking about? Of course it is. Yeah, Courtney Crome. That's who I meant. Courtney Crome.
Oh, Courtney Crome. No, I mean Courtney. I mean, maybe we could change it. Maybe I should put Courtney in. But I just also wanted to demonstrate to the world how
It's
much I
K-Mag
still love
over the line, and he does a Mission Impossible, and it's Courtney underneath.
K-Mag. Yeah.
I'd love to see K-Mag back on the podium somehow. I'd love to see it. So, I have gone for George Russell to convert pole position to a win. A bit of a boring one, that one, but I think he will. I've actually gone for Kimi Antonelli second. I'm going for a Mercedes 1-2. I'm going all in with Mercedes, and I've gone for a Max Verstappen P3. I think I'm not sure. McLaren, I don't think it's going to be their strongest circuit. And I think they, might. Well, neither of them are going to be on the podium. So,
Oh, that's interesting. I don't think it's too out there conceptually because the McLaren cooling package is very good. But if it's another very cold Vegas race, they might struggle to switch their tires on. There could be a pit stop where we see them putting gaffer tape over brake ducts just to try and generate a bit of heat. And I don't think it, oh, there's something tantalizing about that as a prediction, which I'm quite looking forward to. So we'll see how that pans out. Meanwhile, when it comes to fastest lap, Timo, you've gone fairly route one, dare I say, with this.
well, considering some of the other predictions going on here today, I feel like that has to kind of go along Fraser's route of being a little bit balanced for the sake of it. So yeah, George Russell, I just think that he's quick around here. He'll be trying to make sure Verstappen stays behind him. Maybe a fresh set of boots gets past him again to reclaim second place, perhaps. And in the way of doing that, bangs in some fastest laps of the Grand Prix.
That's quite reasonable. I'm looking forward to that. I'm again sort of doing my trying to not predict against Oscar Piastri by opting for Norris as a fastest lap. Henry, you've gone for you quite obvious.
Ocon! Ocon's gonna get it. Ocon's gonna get it. He's gonna be the fastest man. He's going to be, I think, 6 seconds a lap faster than the next fastest driver.
Nice.
Okay.
Or I could do 31. 31 seconds a lap faster. He's somehow managed to find a shortcut that isn't
Is
exceeding track limits.
is everyone else driving F1 Academy cars?
That's how we end up with the third Haas on the podium, is we allow the third Haas car is the F1
Oh God,
Academy.
I'm leaning into his craziness and giving you
Yeah,
accreditation.
do it. Join us. Join us.
Emery's been for a night out in Pop World, I think.
I
He certainly popped
need
something.
it.
Fraser, your fastest lap prediction.
Franco Colapinto. No explanation, just vibes, to be honest with you. Just think he's gonna maybe fresh set of tires at the end of the race, stick in the fastest lap. Franco Colapinto.
Well, you've
Interesting
got to do
stuff.
something at the back of the pack, haven't you? I suppose, Fraser, haven't you?
I don't know what's going on with Alpine this year, but that's a whole new podcast that is talking about Alpine and their performance this year, isn't it? So
Yeah, very, very interesting times for Alpine and whatever's going on there. Then we get to our wild predictions. Timo, I think off the back of São Paulo, a casual fan might expect yours to be quite wild indeed.
yeah, that was very much my thinking. Both Ferrari drivers finish inside the top five. So that would be. See, I'm not even asking for podiums anymore. I'm just asking for a clean weekend. That's all I want, Ferrari. There we go.
That's not bad. I've gone for a slightly bolder option. I've gone for both Williams finish in the top six, which I think is doable under the right conditions.
It's
Henry,
less bold than it used to be, but still just bold enough.
yeah, it's happened a couple of times this season. We've got both of them in the points, but I think sort of herding them into the top six is going to be a real push. So we'll see. Henry, though, you've gone for something
I'd
completely.
argue this is his least bold prediction.
Yeah, I think it's
Yeah,
very similar.
I have gone slightly more sense. I have gone slightly more sensible just to potentially actually lock it in. I reckon that we're gonna jump Aston Martin and get P7 in the constructors for the final two races of the season.
You've only got to outscore them by 2 points. It's doable. You
That's
just
it.
need a P10 and a P9.
Yeah, we get 3 points would do it. Yeah,
Or
and that's presuming that they don't get anything.
more accurately, you just need Ollie Bearman to score 4 points, which is what coming home 10th, ninth.
Yeah.
This is assuming that they don't do what he's obviously predicted them to do and come first and second and third. So,
Well, yeah, that would ultimately bag them seventh quite comfortably. In fact, it might push them very close to sixth. They've only got to get 12 points to overhaul RB, so they're in with a shot there, I think. Fraser, your wild prediction.
I guess this is a little bit on brand with obviously the things I do at inside F2, but I'm going five rookies to finish inside the top 10. I'm not going to name them, but obviously we've got six rookies in Formula
You
2
won't. I
this
think we know which one you're not including.
year. Listen, five rookies inside the top 10 at the end of the race on Sunday. I think that it will be a weekend of the rookies, which I'm looking forward
Oh,
to.
question though, for the sake of clarity, is one of those rookies, or is one of the rookies that you count Fernando Alonso?
Oh, good question. I'm not going to answer that, and we'll see come the end of the race on Sunday. Because if there's four rookies and Fernando Alonso inside the top 10, the answer to that will be no, Timo.
When I'm filling out the results sheet at what 8 o'clock in the morning on Sunday, depending on how hungover I am and how benevolent I'm feeling, include Fernando Alonso as a rookie at that point.
Nice. Love it. I'll slot.
I may be incredibly critical and not count Liam Lawson, which has sometimes been a point of fault.
Oh, Jesse, we're having none of that. None of that. Listen, I'll slide you that tenner later,
Yeah,
yeah?
that you can Venmo at me later. That'll be fine. With that out the way and some predictions laid down for the Las Vegas Grand Prix, that is all we have time for on this episode of the Undercut Podcast. It's been a surprisingly meaty and long one. So we'll be back after the Grand Prix with a review of the Las Vegas Grand Prix and, of course, the season finale of the Formula One Academy Championship. In the meantime, though, Timo, where can you be found?
Got an interview out over on Instagram at the moment of Long on the Cubs with viewers of Kyra, and I've got a video interview out at the end of the week with F1 Academy testing driver Michele Savage. So that'll be there at the head of the weekend for F1 Academy. Also got an on the Cubs IndyCar podcast out on the 2026 driver announcements and a year in review article with Bianca Bustamante coming out over on the Paddock, of course. So bit of everything for you all.
A little bit of everything indeed. Fraser, if people would like more content from yourself, where might they find it?
Yeah, over on Inside F2, go and check us out Instagram, on X, and on YouTube as well. Free podcast episodes due to come out, which they may or may not be out by the time this episode is live, I guess, Jesse. Depends on how quickly you edit this one. But if not, they'll be out in the coming days. So we got an interview with Josh Dirksen, who's just joined Invicta in Formula 2 for next season. And we've got an interview with two newbies to Formula 2, Emo Fittipaldi and also Noel Leon. Really good chat with Noel Leon, actually, from the Campos HQ over in Valencia. So yeah, over on Inside F2, you can check out all of those interviews and all of that content.
Very interesting stuff. I had a chat with Mo at Festival of Speed actually earlier this year, and interesting chap to talk to. Very driven, very excited to be moving over to Formula Two. So it could be an interesting one to keep an eye on. Interesting career to date. So I'm looking forward to seeing how he transitions over. Let's put it that way. I think there's a lot of promise there that we could tap into. Henry, if people want more of the Haas chap, where might they find the Haas chap?
Well, you can find the Haas chap on Instagram and TikTok at, funnily enough, the Haas chap. There is a YouTube account, but it's very dormant because I haven't got really a spare minute to make much long form content. You can email me as well if you want to shout abuse or critique the ridiculousness of my moustache, at thehaaschap@gmail.com. But yeah, making ridiculous videos, usually a big tit of myself. Most days. So come and enjoy that.
Henry, I don't actually follow you, so I'm actually going to drop you a follow after this because I'm thoroughly enjoying your non-biased content that you clearly provide. So yeah, I'm looking forward to you making seeing your posts all about how well RB are going to do at the weekend. So
Oh, I love them. They're my favorite team.
thought so.
Closely followed by Aston Martin as well, another one of Henry's absolute favourites. Yeah, the
Absolutely, yeah.
camaraderie around that point of the field is worth enjoying. And of course, if you'd like more from me, you can of course pick up the latest issue of Classic Car Weekly, which has gone live today and is on shop shelves. You can also listen to the Classic Car Weekly podcast or watch some of our video content, which is slowly appearing on YouTube as well. And if you want more of just me, you can find me on the internet as @JesseOnCars on Instagram, Twitter, and TikTok. Plenty of video content, picture content, and just sort of nonsense being spouted on most corners of the internet there. And otherwise, I'm trying to think what else I'm up to in the coming weekends. No, you can't find me at any places this weekend. I'm not doing anything particularly interesting. So for once, please leave me alone this weekend. Otherwise, this has been the Undercut Podcast. We have been previewing the Las Vegas Grand Prix and we'll be back to review all the action from Sin City in a few short days.